Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. Today on the program, we'll do two segments on last night's Democratic debate, one on the debate generally and one focusing on a specific issue difference that came up between Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders. She wants to abolish the filibuster, so does Pete Buttigieg. Sanders doesn't, and in fact, neither does Joe Biden. They all have their reasons that we'll explain, so we'll go beyond the usual who won, who lost, who had sharp elbows, sports talk kind of debate coverage, and look at an issue, plus an analysis of the debate generally coming up. But first, as we track the norms of our democracy that President Trump continues to shatter, something going on this week is some weird new dynamics between Trump and the Supreme Court. One thing is that the wife of Justice Clarence Thomas, Ginny Thomas, have you heard this yet, is apparently helping Trump with his post-impeachment purge of anyone who he deems insufficiently loyal to him personally. The New York Times had this headline on Monday: among those pressing Trump to weed out disloyalty, Clarence Thomas's wife. And it says, a group led by Ginny Thomas has targeted officials in the administration and lobbied for its own preferred choices. As the president's distrust in those serving him has grown, so has its sway, meaning the sway of Ginny Thomas's group. Today's Washington Post adds that Ginny Thomas was in the cheering crowd at the White House event Trump organized to celebrate his acquittal. Now, as if to distract attention from the possible Justice Thomas family conflict of interest, the president yesterday called on Justices Ginsburg and Sotomayor to recuse themselves from any cases having to do with him, which would, of course, be a high percentage of the cases they rule on, since so many have to do with presidential power and whether presidential or executive branch actions are violating the Constitution. But in calling for those recusals, Trump got caught by John Roberts of Fox News, of all people, not actually knowing what Sotomayor had written in her dissent on a case last week that precipitated Trump's call for her permanent recusal. He was apparently just making it up. So we'll play that clip in a minute. Here to help us set it up and explain what's going on between Trump and the Supreme Court is Ari Melber, MSNBC chief legal correspondent and host of The Beat, weeknights at 6 o'clock Eastern Time on MSNBC. As always, we appreciate when you come on with us. Welcome back. Hi.
Great to see you. Good morning, New York.
First on Ginny Thomas. Is the political activity of someone's spouse ever a cause for charging a conflict of interest in law or legal custom?
It's a great question. It can be seen as a conflict of interest, although adults are generally allowed to have separate professions. If there is joint financial benefit, it can be more complicated. But recall that Donald Trump, who has been a complete and total hypocrite on recusal issues, claimed that he was very upset about FBI, acting FBI Director Andy McCabe's wife, who had run as a Democrat at one point for a local office, which she is allowed to do. So I think that Ginny Thomas is allowed to have most of her political views. I do think the alleged or apparent lobbying to oust people from government does create issues if it gets close to the people who work before, for example, in the DOJ Solicitor General's office, people who work before her husband. So it gets messy, but in fairness to them, they have their speech and political rights.
And the inconsistency that you point out, that was a great example, because Trump had accused former FBI Director Andrew McCabe of running a biased Russia investigation for the time that he was in charge of it because of the fact that his wife was once a Democratic candidate for the Virginia State Senate, I think it was, and took money from Democratic groups.
That's right. And look, Donald Trump, it does not, by his own words or deeds, believe in ethics applied to government service. He doesn't. And so that sounds like a criticism, but it's actually his view. He was very publicly critical of Jeff Sessions recusing from the Mueller probe, which was not something that just popped into the air. There's a process at the Justice Department. Nonpartisan ethics lawyers make the recommendation. There you did have a direct conflict because Jeff Sessions was a part of the campaign that was potentially or actively under investigation. But Donald Trump criticized that not because he disagreed with the ethics call. He just doesn't like the idea that ethics should be a requirement there.
And this purge since acquittal of political appointees seen as not loyal enough to Trump that Ginni Thomas is reportedly helping to lead. The Times article says it includes Jesse Liu, who is now out as U.S. attorney for Washington, D.C., as a target of Ginni Thomas's group. I don't know if Liu has argued before Ginni Thomas's husband, Clarence Thomas, in her role as U.S. attorney. Maybe the Thomases have to limit their dinner table conversations to preserve his judicial independence.
Well, this is where it all comes together, right? Because one of the claimed offenses, according to these right-wing critics of Jesse Liu, which Axios recently reported, was that she didn't, in fact, secure the indictment of Donald Trump's asserted enemy, Andrew McCabe.
Huh.
So, it's all a big, I don't know, what's the word, swamp.
Yeah.
But I do That's think, yes, that there can be cases that would come out of that very office that even if Jesse Liu wasn't specifically technically arguing them, the case she oversaw could reach the Supreme Court. So I think all of that gets quite messy. And I think it's a real problem because, look, what Donald Trump does well, and I know you're going to be talking about the debate this hour. I'm sure many people listening watched it last night. What he does well and what some politicians struggle with is he doesn't attack people just for the things his side disagrees with. He shrewdly attacks them for things the other side claims to care about. So he can literally say, I don't care about ethics. I'm against these recusals of Jeff Sessions. But you guys say you care about ethics and recusals, so don't you care about this?
Mm-hmm.
He does that all the time. And the fact that he's a hypocrite, which I mentioned first, does not mean that it absolves the other side. And that's the opposite sometimes of what you'll see, I think, in the debate last night, which is sometimes the Democrats attacking on things they care about. It's not clear whether the other side cares about.
My guest, Ari Melber, MSNBC chief legal correspondent and host of The Beat, 6 p.m. weeknights Eastern Time on that network. So let's get to Justice Sotomayor. And before we play the clip of Trump not even knowing why he was calling for her to recuse herself, can you describe the dissent she wrote? You can get a little wonky as, you know, the legal correspondent that you are, and describe the dissent that she wrote last week that precipitated this.
This is all about the president's efforts to limit immigration in all sorts of ways. And so, although there are other cases that also are relevant, there are a lot of cases that regard limiting who can come into the country in new ways. The so-called public charge limitation, which says, forget what's on the Statute of Liberty. We are going to do a class-based limits. We're going to, obviously, everyone has seen at the border those efforts. And so when courts typically take a case like that, if under the long-standing precedent there is enough harm, they will basically say, okay, we are going to pause the new policy. So say it's an immigration limit, and they pause it for a while until it gets resolved. What has happened lately is this administration, at more than double the rate of the past two administrations combined, has invoked an emergency argument. Basically, that's the executive branch saying, we think it's an emergency if we don't get this actually reinstated. So if you think about that as, say, it's an immigration limit, no, we need this immigration limit right now. There will be terrible harm, what the lawyers call irreparable harm, if we don't get that. And so you've had this battle between lower court judges who sometimes are saying, whoa, just like with it, if everyone remembers when the travel ban was actually stopped right here in New York first and mm-hmm. then and nationally. And the Justice Department under Trump has said, no, emergency, Supreme Court, help us out. And they've been getting that help on a often 5-4 vote.
So the issue is when a case against government policy is filed, does that policy get to go into effect while it's challenged in court, or does it get put on hold when it gets challenged in court? And what's the usual standard for deciding that?
Well, the usual standard for almost any major injunction, these are big government issues, but even for smaller issues is, you know, you have to say that if you're changing the entire world or status quo, right, you have to have what they call this irreparable harm, this very bad thing that would happen without it. And so generally, if you're keeping things the way they were or the way they've been for decades, I'm simplifying, but most legal experts would say, yeah, obviously.
There's not an emergency there.
It's not an emergency if the only thing that changed was your new law, which might not even be found constitutional. This was not a travel ban case, but I think that's a good reference because I think everyone remembers the feeling of, wow, what the emergency was the new thing, right?
Yeah.
Not, oh, we have to keep the travel ban in place until right. the Supreme Court gets to it. And the travel ban was limited over time.
And in this case, the administration was arguing that it's an emergency that requires them to change immigration law immediately so they can block people receiving legal government benefits from getting green cards, that so-called public charge rule.
Yep.
It's more of a long-term policy argument than any kind of emergency by the standard you just described. But they got the 5-4 majority on the Supreme Court to say, this is an emergency enough, irreparable harm enough to the other people of the United States that this can go into effect while it gets challenged up the chain in the legal system. And Sotomayor wrote a dissent.
Sotomayor dissented and basically went a little farther than normal because she stated her view. And by the way, this is how the system is supposed to work. We have rule of law. The justices who win have to explain themselves. They could just think about it. They can just say, no, we're doing this. That's our power. But we actually have a system where they write out their explanation and the dissent writes out theirs. Now, she wrote what would be considered a tough dissent. And she said, not just on this case, but in general, she basically called them out and said, you five are clearly changing what has always been the standard, and lawyers and judges care a lot about that because we call it precedent. And she basically said, I'm simplifying, but she said, you know what? Everyone can tell you have a new standard that's just to help Trump, and not just to help Trump, but help Trump keep out immigrants. And that was kind of the undertow of this. So it's one of these things where—
Tough language.
If we talk, you know, Brian, if we talk very big picture, lawyers speak and say, oh, irreparable harm and preliminary injunction and temporary restraining order. Okay, what are we talking about? What we're really talking about is the view of Justice Sotomayor that Donald Trump found five people on the Supreme Court to change the rules to make it harder for often minority brown immigrants to get to this country. So when you peel it back, you go, oh, okay, this is familiar because this is the Donald Trump, this is the agenda that's so controversial.
So listeners, now you have a sense of what the underpinning Supreme Court arguments were and
I'm
what
just
the
sorry
issue
I took
was.
So long.
nobody could have done it that short except you because you have to do it on television every night for a mass audience. So Trump apparently saw some coverage of this case on Fox News. And this led Trump to assert that Sotomayor should recuse herself from all cases ever having to do with him. But he apparently had no idea of what you just explained, no idea of what Sotomayor actually wrote. And he got caught kind of making it up by Fox's own White House correspondent, John Roberts. Here's the key part of that exchange.
It's almost what she's trying to do is take the people that do feel a different way and get them to vote the way that she would like them to vote. I just thought it was so inappropriate, such a terrible statement for a Supreme Court justice.
What was inappropriate about the statement? I'm not an attorney, so I can't really look into
what
these.
The statement was, John.
Well, she seemed to criticize the White House for running to the Supreme Court at the drop of a hat to seek a
stay. No, I don't think that was it. But I think what she did say is she's trying to shame, the way I look at it, she's trying to shame people with perhaps a different view into voting her way.
No, I don't think that was it, the president said after John Roberts explained what it actually was. What did you hear there?
Well, first of all, you always have to be careful when a well-researched reporter says, I'm not an X. You know, I'm not a scientist, but there's the facts on global warming, or I'm not a doctor, but it seems like the president has no plan for coronavirus. So I think John Roberts, actually not a lawyer, but clearly knew what the case was about.
He did his homework.
Yeah, the president didn't have his homework done there. And I think the president is cribbing from what his clues are about what people, what he perceives as his base, what they care about. So they care about this case more than others. Clearly,
because it's immigration.
Because it's immigration, right. And so, and Justice Sotomayor, you know, we haven't explicitly mentioned it thus far, but Justice Sotomayor brings unusual diversity to the Supreme Court. There are not historically many women of color to ever have served on that court at any point,
right.
Which is not to say that controls her views.
Any.
Right, or any. it's not to say it controls her views, but it's obviously relevant. And he is attacking, we should mention as well, in the press conference, he singled out two justices, both of whom are women who were appointed by Democrats. So there's a lot of things going on for him.
Because he said Ginsburg should recuse also for other reasons. We're almost out of time. But just to fact check Trump's claim, did Sotomayor write anything or even imply anything in her dissent about how people should vote or what they should feel shame about?
I doubt it. I mean, look, if you're asking me that question, apart from the fact that Trump said it, one could argue that well-written dissents do appeal to something more than just technical legal argument, because well-written dissents, what's their purpose? You lost today. You lost the case. They are written both to the court, to the justices, and to the country, if I may be so idealistic, to say to everyone, here's the direction we actually should go, and sooner or later, hopefully, history will recognize that and we can right this. So I would say a good dissent can do that. I don't think Donald Trump was saying that in an informed way, no.
And so as we run out of time, Ari, we're almost numb in this country to these individual incidents like these at this point. So what do you think is the larger context or significance of Trump jawboning at Supreme Court justices like this?
Pressure works. It works when it's applied by the powerful, but it also can work when it is applied by people with less power. The people in power are pressuring every institution that might hold them accountable, not because these institutions don't matter, but precisely because they are some of the bulwarks that do. He is obsessed with the press, and especially the television press. And I can tell you, I see ways that television press does matter. I would say, thank goodness, obviously I work there. He's obsessed with the courts and the institutions of accountability because they are some of the last remaining levers that affect him. Obviously, the Supreme Court, which has in certain ways narrowed not only his immigration agenda, but held back other things. The outrage over the other meddling that he publicly demanded and that the Bill Barr Justice Department appeared to give into over the past few weeks was met with such public outrage and pressure that Bill Barr had to run out and claim he disagrees with certain things. Then we can debate his veracity. Mm-hmm. But the pressure works and it matters. And it is the cynical attack on all of us as citizens. I say that not as a partisan point, but as citizens, to try to convince us these things don't matter. So what you do, what your listeners choose to do as citizens, all of it can matter. They want to convince you it doesn't.
Ari Melber, chief legal correspondent for MSNBC and host of The Beat on that network at 6 o'clock Eastern time on weeknights. Thank you so much for coming in. I really appreciate your
analysis.
Thank
you for what you're doing, and thanks for having me, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC will break down last night's debate and get reaction from Jonathan Capehart of the Washington Post editorial board next.